presentation that I'm going to give is basically, as I said, a look back, and it's from basically an outsider's perspective. And by that I mean I'm a planetary volcanologist. Most of the work I do is in the outer solar system or on Mars. I have done some lunar research. I worked on the moon visual near-infrared spectroscopy of the moon, doing the Galileo Earth-Moon flybys of the early 90s for my master's thesis, and I then didn't get back to lunar work until about 2000, when I published a paper using a computer model to assess thermomechanical erosion as a mode of formation for the lunar sinuous rills. But like all of you, I've been fascinated in the moon and the way it's been explored, and I think it's quite appropriate to take a look back and talk about some of these issues to set the stage for where we're going. So if some of you in the audience who haven't been as involved in planetary exploration may wonder, how do we decide how we go to a planet? Why do we send orbiters to one planet and landers on another? Well, it turns out that there is a particular approach that we consider as scientists on how we explore the planets of the solar system, and this goes back to the beginnings of space exploration. We take a phased approach. We do what's technically possible, what the engineering and our knowledge allows us to do. We do that which we can afford, given the budgets at the time, and then we do the easy stuff first and then get to more complex. And in the case of solar system exploration, this is sort of the order of increasing complexity. Planetary flybys, putting a spacecraft into orbit of about a planet, setting a lander down, doing a hard lander first, just smacking something into the ground, and then putting down something as a soft lander. The next stage would be mobility on a surface. On a rocky surface, that could be a rover. If it's a gaseous body, putting a balloon or something in the atmosphere. The next stage would be robotic sample return, studying the rocks and soil samples collected by a robot returned to Earth, studied in our laboratories. And the next stage, I would say, could be considered an orbiter or lander on the outer planet satellites. This is because the satellites of the outer, or the moon, or the planets of the outer solar system, the gas giants Jupiter and Saturn, are very large gravity wells, and it's very difficult to get spacecraft into orbits of the moons of those bodies, as Galileo and Cassini can attest. And then finally, the most expensive, the hardest to do, I would say, would be sending men to orbit and land on a body. So this is the approach that has been taken. And when we think about it, I have a series of charts that I'm going to refer back to showing the planets and major moons of the solar system and all of these modes of exploration going out this way. And of course, telescopic observation is all that we had when the space age began back in 57 with the launch of Sputnik, the first artificial satellite, and then launched by the Soviet Union, and then the Americans' first satellite, Explorer 1, in 1958, which we all know discovered the Van Allen belt. So I'm going to sort of focus on lunar exploration. I'm going to show these charts. Don't try and read it. It basically is just a list of all of the robotic spacecraft that have explored. And I'm just going to point out a couple of things to keep in mind. The first flyby was by Luna 1, Russian or Soviet mission. And as we saw in the presentation earlier today, it was 49 years ago yesterday that the first image of the moon by the Luna spacecraft was obtained. U.S. and this was the time of the great space race between the U.S. and the USSR, so lots of missions were going on. Our first hard lander, Ranger 7 in 64, and I'll show you a movie of when that went down into Alphonsus Crater. The Soviets had the first soft lander, the first lunar orbiter. And you notice that if you're noticing the dates on here, that we were having launches, you know, about every month. And you know, it was a great time to just, you know, we were learning how to do this, to try over and over again to be successful in these missions. But the launch rates were so much higher than today. It's we can be rather envious of that approach. The first circumlunar flyby by the Soviet Zond, and then of course Apollo 11, the first manned moon landing, and the United States has been the only country successful to land people on there. There has been robotic rovers on the moon, the Lunokhod series, and I'll show you pictures of that. Many people don't realize that the Soviets had robotic rovers, long-distance traveling rovers on the surface long before we had Sojourner and on Mars with the Mars Pathfinder mission in 97. So this is, I believe, up to date with all of the successful launches. We've got one coming up from Chandrayaan on the 22nd, and then, of course, LRO next year. So we see that the success rate has been about 67% for these nations. Now, I'm just going to show a few images of some of these past spacecraft. The early missions, the Apollo era, the first planetary orbiters with Ranger and Surveyor, the robotic soft lander, and Lunar Orbiter. Lunar Orbiter actually obtained what is still the highest resolution data set of many parts of the moon, and it actually imaged the surface with cameras that developed the film on board and then transmitted that back to Earth, where it was able to be assembled in these strips. And if you've ever seen the Lunar Orbiter image archive, it looks really impressive. And here's the movie, as you see, for Ranger 7, as you get closer and closer, and landing here in Crater Alphonsus. And Paul Spoutis made some good comments about showing the nature of crater scaling at all stages of resolution. It'd be appropriate to mention that the Soviets had active missions going on at this time. They were very successful at Venus, not really successful at Mars, and they had several of the first successes, soft landers and orbiters at the moon. And here's the Luna 3 image, the first pick from 59. And over here, you see, this is what the Lunokhod rovers look like. I always liken this to one of those things that Wile E. Coyote would put together to chase the Roadrunner. You get one of those Acme bathtubs and put it on roller skates. That's not meant to be disparaging, but I just think it's quite cute the approach that they took with that. So at the end of the Apollo era, with the return of the astronauts, this is how solar system exploration was at this time frame. So, you know, we've had flybys and landers on Venus. Completely from the Earth, we had men on the moon, and we had sent flybys and orbiters at Mars, and these are the pioneers flybys of Jupiter and Saturn. So as we proceeded on in the post-Apollo era, there were still a few more lunar missions that were going on. The second Lunokhod and the robotic sample returned by the Soviet Union, the Luna series, that brought samples back from around Crissium Basin. But from that time, it really ended, and then the first new thing that involved the moon really were the Galileo flybys. Now, of course, Galileo was a Jupiter orbiter. I was fortunate enough to participate in that mission from launch through the cruise phase, and it did two flybys of the moon. And you see this multispectral observation. The lunar north pole is here. You can see Mare Tranquillitatis here with the dark blue of the high titanium Mare basalts, the pinkish color there of the feldspathic lunar highlands crust. Shortly after that, the Clementine mission, a NASA DOD mission to test new lightweight instruments, obtained a very good data set of spectral data for the whole of the moon. And here you see a view of the far side, including the South Pole Aitken Basin, which we'll hear more about as a prime target for future missions. More recently, we've had the Lunar Prospector, one of the first discovery missions that had instruments to give us global geochemical information on the moon. The European Space Agency's SMART-1, Small Missions for Advanced Research and Technology. It was a European lunar orbiter, used solar electric ion propulsion that took months to get it into orbit, and it has quite a nice data set. They have not done much data analysis from it. They had money for the engineering, but not the science analysis for a lot of SMART-1 data. And then, of course, the missions that are active right now, the Cayuga or Selene mission with the high-definition TV camera we saw at LPSC last year, the Chinese first lunar orbiter, the Chang'e 1, which we've heard about, and then the upcoming launch. This is actually October 22nd. We heard for the Chandrayaan launch, and then LRO next year. So in as I said before, from an outsider's perspective, somebody who's just dabbled a little bit in lunar research, I've thought about the types of data that we have and where I think we should go. And, of course, Clive Neal and the other lunar experts in the audience will correct me and make further comments in the upcoming talks about where we should be going. But the points that struck me as I have thought about this are: early lunar robotic exploration of the moon was stimulated in many ways by the Cold War, and we all remember Kennedy's speech and that led to Apollo, et cetera. Even though Apollo enabled return of samples, plus the 39 years of laboratory analyses we've had since then, there is still much we don't know about the moon. And I think Paul Spoudis made this case very eloquently in the first talk of the party session a couple of days ago. Lunar orbiter images are still the highest quality, highest resolution images of the surface, but those should be improved upon by the LROC, the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter camera, that my colleague Mark Robinson is working on at Arizona State right now. The Clementine Lunar Prospector and the current and upcoming missions are providing very high quality multispectral and elemental global data sets that are really good for compositional information. So we're in good shape in there. And the upcoming M3 mission that we heard about this morning is gonna provide even more of this type of data. My impression has also been that the studies of the lunar interior are very deficient. The new GRAIL mission, which we'll hear about shortly, will help with that. But further use, I think, of seismology, heat flow, if it can be accomplished via landed stations, I think is an area ripe for future lunar exploration, whether robotic or manned. Additional study of a wider diversity of lunar surface samples is required, either in situ or via sample return. And just from the talks we've heard, there's quite a bit more that needs to be investigated. And then I think a much better characterization of lunar resources, water, helium-3, the search for metals that can be used to construct habitats if we're going to send people to the moon. These are all things that need to be better characterized, and I'm hopeful that the upcoming missions will all consider that. So just to sort of conclude, I use this in my talks when I give them to public about the exploration of the solar system. This is where we were at in the dawn of the space age. This is where we were at the end of the Apollo era. This is where we're at right now. So there's still, quite a bit more has been filled in with missions. Some various things are planned or under study, but there's still a lot out there that needs to be done. And that's, I think, a goal for some of us to completely explore our solar system. And that will set the point when we'll be ready to start exploring even further into the cosmos. I hope this has been a useful review. Thank you very much, and I'll take questions. Yes?
How does the resolution of the Cayuga imagery compare to that of the lunar orbiter?
The Cayuga, the Japanese mission? That's a very good question, and I honestly don't know the answer to that. If somebody else has some insights into that. I know that the high-definition TV images, which is a unique instrument that's never been flown before, have been very compelling that we've seen. They've actually produced movies of some of their orbital flyovers, including the one of the South Pole. And I thought that was, seeing that in Houston at LPSC this past March was very impressive. Yes, Jack?
All right, just my